Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site and fm1032.com.au.
It's interesting to think, what would the world be like if Jesus had never walked the earth? How would life as we know it be different? What are the things that we take for granted that we just wouldn't have? Well, we're going to begin a new series tonight on how Christianity has changed the world. And we're speaking to a man who's written a book by that very title. His name's Alvin J. Schmidt. He's a professor of sociology, emeritus, and he joins us now from his home in Illinois. And it's great to have you on Open House.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, we wanted to start this week looking at the impact of the life of Jesus and then the Christian movement that he, in the end, set in motion on education. But firstly, why did you write a book like this?
Well, it's very interesting. Back in 1994, I specifically remember the date. You see, in addition to being a college professor, I am also an ordained Lutheran clergyman. And on occasion, while I was teaching college, asked to preach a sermon. And I was asked to preach one on Christmas Eve, and it occurred to me as I was preparing to write the sermon to see what kind of contributions Christ's birth has made to the world in existence, particularly the Western world. And as I went to libraries, I could find next to nothing. I found a stray little article that mentioned something here and there. And so I put it in the back of my mind, and I thought, well, maybe someday I'll research it and write a book on it. I was at that time teaching full-time and writing another book. And so by the late 1990s, about 1999, I began to fully get involved in this. And as a result of that, this book came about.
Okay. And I guess it would have been quite an eye-opener for you personally, too.
It sure was. There were a lot of things I learned that I was utterly amazed about. To this day, I am. In fact, I could write a book on each of the chapters that are there.
Yes, absolutely. And there's hospitals and healthcare and education, and then there's politics and there's art and culture and all sorts of things, which I'm going to be looking forward to exploring with you over the coming weeks. Well, let's start with education tonight. The impact that Christianity as a movement has actually had on education, where would you even begin to look at that?
Well, one of the things that we need to note is that Christianity has always been focused on education, if you will. Jesus, for example, few people would doubt that he was the greatest teacher that ever walked the face of this earth, and he employed teaching techniques of all kinds, parables, human life stories and the like, that stirred both friend and foe. And before he resurrected and went to heaven, he told the disciples to go and teach all nations. This made it incumbent upon the early Christians to teach others. As a result of that, the early Christians took it to heart and seriously. We find, for example, not only that the New Testament was written before the year 100, and much of the New Testament is educational material, mm-hmm. telling people how to live a God-pleasing life and why they ought to, because of what Christ has done for them. Finding in the second century, or actually maybe even the latter part of the first century, we're not quite sure, there's a document that was written called the Didache, which technically means the teaching of the 12, although the 12 apostles didn't write it. But there again, it's a document instructing the Christians how to live the Christian life and to not be withdrawn from the world.
And so when it comes to what we would look at now as the modern educational institution, maybe a primary school, a secondary school, college and all that, where did that arrive in the historical timeline?
Well, that's interesting. If you go back to the early Christian era or in the second century, and on, they had what was called catechetical schools. They were ones that began to teach both men and women. It's another distinctive mark that the pagans, as far as we can determine, whether it was the Romans or the Greeks, didn't really have what we call co-education. The early Christians took women in and teaching the teaching process as well as men. And so the idea of education then in the Middle Ages spread, by the way, through what was often called ecclesiastical schools, cathedral schools. Then we have in the 7th century Charlemagne the Great, who was a great promoter of education, got a famous Englishman by the name of Alcuin come from England to the continent and engage in cathedral schools, Latin schools, and again they taught both boys and both girls. And then when we get to the time of the Reformation in the 1500s and the like, Luther was very, very prominent in education. In fact, he advocated the state should make compulsory laws for children to go to school, which, by the way, today is very common in the whole Western world.
That's right.
And you can trace that route right back to Luther. Then also in the 1500s, a contemporary of Luther's, a fellow by the name of Johann Sturm, a layman, who introduced graded levels of education. We're still operating with graded levels of education to this day. Hmm. And you had also then the kindergarten concept that came a little later by Friedrich Froebel, who basically originated the idea of the kindergarten concept. He was the son of a Lutheran pastor. You see, the interesting thing about it is that all of these people were devout Christians. Hmm. And they, you know, as Jesus said, you were to be in the world, but not of them. So they didn't withdraw from the world. They were in the world. They became involved.
So there we've got the beginning of schooling or educational institutions as we know them. You then just touched on the kindergarten idea as well.
Yes.
And how much of a jump do we then have to make from there to then go to universities?
Well, actually, the universities, you have to go back. In many ways, they began in the 5th century already with Benedict of Nursia, who founded many monasteries. He established scriptoria, where they translated not only the Bible or made copies of it, but also the classical works of the Greeks and the Romans, and basically established a library system. And then you had, moving on to the 1100s, the universities, really the monasteries, even though the idea initially perhaps wasn't great in that they withdrew from the world, but nevertheless, the monasteries were embryonic universities. Mm-hmm. And so you had, for example, the University of Bologna entering in the 1100s, coming on the scene, the University of Paris that engaged in theology and law, and then also in medicine, and the University of Paris then spawned the University of Oxford and Cambridge and universities in Portugal and Germany and Italy and so on down the line. So basically, the origin of universities and even research in the universities has a lot to do with the monks. The monks were not afraid of getting dirt under the fingernails, as I say. You see, when you go back to the Greeks and the Romans, particularly the Greeks, to them, ideas were all theoretical. They were never to be used or applied and attested because that involved manual work, and manual work was for the slaves. And so they never, ever combined theory with research. The monks did. And this was the great advance in the universities that came about in the Western world. They did not just speculate. The Greeks, for example, would theorize how many teeth there were in a horse's mouth, but they would resist going and counting how many there were to see whether the theory was right.
Okay.
It's often referred to as armchair reasoning.
Yeah.
Well, the Christians combined research and theories, and as a result, you have the tremendous advance in education, finally, great advance in science, even that was already there in the early 1200s.
Well, before we leave the idea of universities, though, when you think of Harvard, Cambridge, Oxford, some of the, you know, the Ivy League universities around the world, all of those were actually founded by the Christian Church in some way, weren't they?
Every one of them, every university, every institution, these were Christian institutions. Secularism, as we know it, was unknown in those days. And again, they did it for a number of reasons. In most cases, they were noble reasons. They wanted to serve God and mankind. Hmm. And this, again, you have to take all the way back to Jesus Christ, who, as I often say, the contributions of Christianity made and how it changed the world was not the primary focus of the Christian message, but it was a powerful byproduct.
Yeah. You also mentioned in How Christianity Changed the World about the fact that Christians were behind the push to see education for the deaf and blind as well.
Yes. Again, when you look at, for example, the blind, the Braille method that we have is an interesting story that I talk about in the book. And even long before you had the Braille method, the Christians already in the early 600s had developed what was called Tiflocomia, or Tiflocomium in the singular, meaning schools for the blind. Tiflos in Greek means blind. So it preceded, you know, by 1,000 years or more even, the Braille method. And from blind schools, for example, we also have the deaf schools. Again, one of the great founders, Epi, for example, in France, and Gallaudet in the United States were, you know, very devout Christians. And also, likewise for Sunday schools. Sunday schools today are often understood as Sunday morning ventures where you learn a little bit about the Bible. Well, the Sunday school movement that came about with Robert Raikes of Scotland in the 1700s was to take in poor children who did not have the opportunity to go to school because they had to work in mines and whatnot all, with child labor being common in those days. And he felt sorry for them. He wanted to teach them the three R's, and that's what the early Sunday schools did. Again, taking education to people who never had it before.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating. Alvin, I know this is a very hypothetical question to throw at you, and it's very, very hard to know how history could be different if certain movements or certain cataclysmic events throughout it hadn't been there. But just say Jesus had not walked the earth and hadn't set off the movement that is now known as Christianity. Where do you think education might be today?
Oh, dear. Certainly not where it is today. You know, I can't argue that it would be even maybe halfway where it is here. You have to say where Christianity has had the greatest presence. There you have had the greatest advancement in education, and not only education, but likewise with relative to the freedom of women, or, for example, the development of hospitals, or, for example, the development of the justice legal system, the abolition of slavery. Where Christianity has the greatest presence. This is what happened. Where would it be if Christianity had not come about? I don't know. It's a hypothetical question, but I have no hesitance in saying it would be far from what it is today.
Alvin, very fascinating to talk to you. Next week, we're going to be exploring hospitals and healthcare, just another one of those things that we kind of take for granted here in the West, and just how things would be different if Jesus hadn't walked the earth. Thanks for joining us, and look forward to continuing the conversation this time next week.
Yeah, and so do I, and thank you.
That's Alvin J. Schmidt, author of How Christianity Changed the World. Looking forward to continuing the conversation this time next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.